to heaven, and I am on the way to hell. What is this to you? Leave me alone!
Can't do it. We'll do it live.
Okay.
No. We'll do it live. Do it live. I'll write it and we'll do it live. And thing sucks.
You're doing a terrific job. There's some wonderful people overnight. I think Matt Schneid is brilliant and R. Paul Martin is brilliant, but I don't know how many people get to hear them. And I want to say thanks. It's a tremendous job.
Well, thank you very much for that.
Into the dustbin of history. I'm your curator and janitor, Max Schmid. All right, we turn rapidly to Lost Gene Shepherd, once again from the Gary Hines collection. And this one is yet another early rendition of the BB gun story. That's the tail end of the show. There's a whole lot more before we get to that. And guess what? I don't know when he decided it was a Red Ryder gun. But it never was in any of the early incarnations of the story. Red Ryder came much later, maybe when he finally wrote it down and put it into his so-called novel, his collection of short stories that Shepard always referred to as novels. At any rate, appeared first, what, in Playboy, I guess? Well, ours not to speculate, ours just to hear it before we run totally out of time. From Thursday, November 7th, 1963, here's Gene Shepherd, not available anywhere else, but right here in the dustbin of history, WBAI, New York.
everything under control? Do you have it firmly in your grasp? Do you have your hands on the great controls of life, steering your tiny ship through the cosmos of eternity, guiding by the stars of morality, rocking in the great waters of diversity, adversity, danger, and evil. And that rotten lout in the promotion department.
Do you have your little ship under control?
So now you're steering your little canoe of life in the placid waters of time. Fishing for the sunfish of happiness and the barracuda of desire. And that great gleaming sun, that orb, that warming globe in the sky is falling like a flickering candlelight between your shoulder blades as you steam ever upward, ever onward. And as you quietly float in the shallows in the morning, whistling workward on the A train, reading Winnie Winkle. Little Orphan Annie. Mutton Jeff. Lil Abner. Pogo. I'm little Charlie Brown. And other great assorted insights into this vast sea of life. Hang on. Steer well. Tonight you shall sleep the sleep of the righteous. The beautiful. The sensitive. The true, the real, the honest, the brave, the clean, the reverent. Yes, live but to drift and to dream. You got everything under control? There. That clears the pipes. Sifts the ashes a little, shall we say. Swats the flies off the screen door of that swinging, revolving exit of existence. Wake up.
Come on, get up there. Come on, you old lazy hound. What are you going to do? You old lazy hound, get up there. Come on, come on, get moving. All together now. You've been sitting around and sleeping too long. You've been sitting around and just picking your teeth too long. You've been chewing that Beeman's gum too long. You've got to get up and start moving around. You gotta start looking at that sun. You gotta start looking at that sky. You gotta start feeling them cooling breezes coming down from the North Pole. It is time for you, old buddy, to get on the stick.
Mr. Shepherd, I used to enjoy your program so much when you sang pretty songs and talked such nice stories about when you were a boy. For years, I've listened to John Gambling Sr., and now I listen to John Gambling Jr., and I expect to listen to John Gambling III. My husband, Clarence, falls asleep during the middle of your program, and every time you come on with that terrible music, I don't know which way you're going to go, and I think...
Come on, boy, let's go! Time to pick him up and leave him now! Gasket. Hang in another head gasket. Got another oil leak, Eddie. Dripping all over the floor. The pan is squirting. Crying out loud. Busted another valve spring. I'm sorry. Once in a while, you know, after all, it is Thursday. You know, speaking of busting another gimmick, blah, I will award you the Brass Figligee with Bronze Oak Leaf Tom. If you can tell me the name of the organization which once was on the radio, three ladies, the wildest radio show I think ever done in America, and as a matter of fact, wilder even than Vic and Sade, where the three ladies belonged to a club, and occasionally one of the three ladies would sing the club song, which consisted of, in part, the following lyrics. Hooray for the U.S. of A. Hooray for the U.S. of A. And the fields of waving grain. Oh, we salute you. And the name of the show consisted of the names of three ladies, and they were always having a coffee clutch. Yeah, all right, we're putting you to the test. Insane. I'll tell you, you can see how in those days, how Sinclair Lewis wrote. Yeah. They were doing all that stuff on the radio, too. You know, it was all in the air. I mean, it was the social commentary was the order of the day. And if you think satire is big today, Dad, it's nothing compared to what it used to be. Seriously. When guys in all mediums were saying wild stuff about the world, and not just about love or sex or big ladies or little ladies or dwarfs or, you know, I be you, you be me. All right, all together now. Here we go. One, two. Gee, I'm a terrible singer. Oh, no, terrible. Terrible, terrible, terrible. By certain standards. Now, by other standards, I'm magnificent. Oh, yes, indeed. Sometimes the commentaries come so thick and fast you don't know which way to go. Have you ever been in Kansas City? You think Kansas City is not making it? You think they're not saying it out there? I read to you a report from Kansas City, Missouri, October 11th, United Press International. Mrs. Yetta Sarlinski stretched out on her couch to watch The Late Show on television. She awoke to find her TV set had been stolen. Right in the middle of Johnny Carson's most funny commercial. And Milt Kamen's funniest gag. The important thing to remember, though, Mrs. Yetta Sarlinski was asleep while The Tonight Show was going on. You didn't think I could imitate chickens, did you? That's a thing you learn at a very early age in Indiana. Matter of fact, I used to gas him at the PTA after Mr. Melton would play his flute solo,
As the kids always, you know, the you know how jazzy kid humor is. Hey, Melton's playing his flute follow. Hey, he's playing his flute follow, and he would play something like ta 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 ta. Mrs. Bundy operating the upright piano. Ta 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 ta. He would pause, hold his flute at port arms, and she would go ding, 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 ding. Well, then Miss Norton would say, and now, from second grade, little Gene Shepherd will entertain us with his wonderful imitations. I would wait off stage and never go. You're rotten, snide laughing. I can also imitate a pig, if you'd like to hear. Of course, I do that every night. But, I mean, really imitate. Oh, you want me to do that one? I can also imitate a cow who's been spending too much time in the pasture with her hero. You want me to imitate that? That's a great one. I didn't learn that one until I was in sixth grade. I was deep in my Bull Durham stage, and speaking of Bull, this is WOR AM and FM New Yorkie, and we'll be here until they blow the whistle.
BAI, New York.
And yes, don't worry about it. We've got things under control here. Among other things we have under control is the Mandarin House commercial. It's okay. And I would like to recommend to those of you who are wanting to make the exotic world your world, I would like to suggest most respectfully that you try Mandarin House. By the way, do you know that Mandarin House, get me that little piece of copy quick, scurry out in there, it's in my box. Mandarin House is the only Chinese restaurant in town that does Chinese catering, really big time Mandarin catering. And if you would like to have the wildest dinner you ever had in your life catered in your home, if you're having a big party, they will. This is not like, you know, call up and we'll deliver, chop suey, that kind of stuff. A real catering service. Listen to this. They have a catering, the only Chinese catering service in New York. The foods they prepare for your party are exactly like the stuff served in the Mandarin House restaurants. And they'll cater anything from cocktail parties to dinners to et cetera in genuine Mandarin style. In your office, if you want to really make the big coffee break, you can call them at Watkins 90551. Watkins 90551. Mandarin House Catering Service. Oh, Sinister Oriental Catering Service. Hiya. Oh, my. Boy, that was a scary commercial. Boy. I don't know what's the matter with me tonight. I'm a very terrible person here tonight. Well, of course, it's easy to become a terrible person when you look around and you see what's going on. Of course, I do not, and I have to give a disclaimer here. Oh, speaking of terrible things, tomorrow night I'm going to be at Farley Dickinson. Farley Dickinson. Oh, Fairley. You got a Farley Dickinson hand there. What do you mean? All right. Fairley Dickinson. They are Fairley, yes. What do you mean? It's Fairly Ridiculous, the name of the place there. And it's in the Rutherford campus. Well, you know, it's very difficult. The Jersey patois is an impossible patois. And only the natives, it's like Holland, you know. The natives of Holland are the only ones who really can understand the pronunciation of their airport. And there are certain towns in New Jersey, Orange! Now, it is not easy to get that one down pat. It took me over 3 years to learn to say that one. Orange! South Orange! You gotta holler, you know, the oranges! It's very hard for an outlander to learn that one. Trim! Try that one. Try it. Trim! It's not easy. You can really separate the sheep from the goats with that one. No, Kim! That's not an easy one to do. There's another. Morrison!
That's a quick one, too. Pizza. Garden State. What? Garfield? Oh, that's a good one. Garfield. Yeah. Well, it's Rutherford. And that's Farley Dickinson. What is it? What are you so worried about? That's the name of the school, isn't it? Farley Dickinson? All right. I know that crew over there. They are Farley, too, at that. But not all the way, but fairly. Oh, terrible person. Now speaking of, you know, you rise out of your civilization. None of us can escape. And I, from time to time, I get letters from people who say, Mr. Shepherd, you're that rotten, cackling, carping criticism you're heaping upon your society. Don't you understand? You're an American. And you're as much a part of it as anybody else. Well, that's true, and never at any point do I disassociate myself from the insanity that is going on. What do you think I'm doing? Spending my life in this crummy little studio yelling. What could be more American than that? Or trivial. Bop. Boop. You don't like my production? I'll produce you right out of your socks, Dad. If you want production, I'll grind you up like a child. Speaking of grinding you up like a child, perhaps you have been curious as to what the real meaning of life is and what genuine education is about. I think if you will look through my official records over there, the big one, 50 fantastic moments of grandioseness, and see if you can find, Beethoven's Fifth for this one. Or possibly something like the Pathetique might do it. Don't look so confused. Just go right through that and pick it out and lay it in. And the first, if it's the first cut you're using, it skips, Eddie. So sit it back in the middle there. I know every last inch of it. I just thought, there we go. Here it comes. All right, bring it in there, Eddie. Hunting is not necessarily the object when a young fellow is given the privilege of owning a gun. The boy, lucky enough to be taught to shoot a gun properly, is learning more than how to hunt. He is learning some basic facts of life. I am quoting to you from the New York Times, 11/1/63. An article entitled, Learning to Handle Guns Called Beneficial to a Child. Yes, I think that's pretty true. The boy, lucky enough, prepare me with a little Beethoven there, Ed. I'll show you what production is like. Just hold it in abeyance there. Just hold your hand on horses. The boy, lucky enough to be taught to shoot a gun properly and to follow woodland trails, is learning more than how to hunt. He is learning some basic aspects of life. Can you see this little squirt looking in the window at Abercrombie and Fitch? And they got this great big 50-millimeter elephant gun. And the daddy is looking at his son. One day I'm going to take you out back of the house, out in Darien, and we're going to line up on a few tin cans. You're going to be down there, and you're going to be holding that thing right up to your shoulder. And, son, you'll be learning some basic aspects of life. How to hunt or to handle a gun, it gives him great pride in himself. For parents interested in teaching children about guns, what every parent should know is in a little booklet entitled When a Boy or Girl Wants a Gun and Shooting Fun for Everyone. Woo-hoo!
another one, Daddy. I sure have learned how to live. This is the way to live, Daddy.
Like I say, it's a... Oh, boy. It's a very exciting Thursday night. Well, did I ever tell you about the time I learned about guns? A couple of times, actually. But one of the most embarrassing and spectacular, and to this day, I don't know whether I should tell you this or not, because this is a deeply held family secret. It's my secret. Nobody in the family knows about it, but I'm going to have to tell you about it. I was on my family, my mother and my father, for you, for the elder types, my old man and my old lady for the kids. I was on those two people for about, probably a year. See, I was laying the groundwork for Christmas. And I was on them because at that time I was deep in my boy's life phase. You know, do they still print Boy's Life? I haven't read it. My subscription ran out last year. And I haven't seen it since. They don't carry it in my barber shop. They got a couple of other magazines there, but they don't carry that one. And I ought to talk to Enrico and tell him, you know. Because I think if you read Boy's Life, you'll learn a lot about it. I remember the last time, I think it was about the second or the third to the last copy of Boy's Life on my subscription that arrived. They had the whole last page. It says, "Boys, have you discovered this new fascinating hobby? Build monsters in your spare time." Yeah, it was about a monster, all the monster kits you could get, you know. That is very different than what Dan Beard used to sell, you know, Indian arrowheads and little kits on how to tie knots and how to go out in the woods and discover moss on the north side of the trees, you know, that kind of stuff. Now, say the new thing in Boy's Life, and this is the Boy Scout magazine, is kids, if you discover another, and of course the monsters come in several sizes. The big deluxe monster is double life size. I don't know exactly what a life size monster is, but this is double that, you know. Somehow I kind of like the idea of a kid living in his house and he's got 17 giant Frankenstein monsters that are double life-size with their heads bumping against the ceiling, you know, in his pad. And he's got four Draculas, and he's got three things from the outer depths. And this little squirt is sitting there in the middle. He's got nine different plastic face masks, you know, the kind that the rubber kind you pull down. And he's waiting for his time to come until he grows up to be double life-size. But I'm reading Boy's Life, you know. I haven't read it for a long time, and it's gone. I'm sorry, but in those days I was deep in my real Boy's Life phase. They'd have a story that would begin. I don't think girls grew up or were involved in that. Are there any girl types who read Boy's Life then? Now, of course, every chick would. But in those days, boys read Boy's Life, and I presume girls read Girl's Life. I don't know what they had. What? Open Road for Girls? Chicks are all out on the... What? That's a terrible connotation. The girls are open road, open street for... What? Oh, the American girl. Oh, I see the American girl. I guess they didn't. They couldn't have open road for girls. There was one called the Open Road for Boys. And the Open Road for Boys, if you really read that magazine closely, it was a path between the backyard and the garage and back again. Back again, especially. They insisted on that. But the Boy's Life stories would usually consist of this kind of thing. There'd be a headline called, "Og, Son of Fire! Og, Son of Fire!" Yeah. And there you'd see Og, you see. Og looked like a Boy Scout with a fur rug on. It says, "Og, a child of the ancient primeval past. Og, one of the early primeval men, fighting against the saber-toothed tigers, battling nature to finally create the world that is ours, to make life safe through 41. All right, I'll give you the brass figlegy with 18 palm leaves if you can tell me who wrote Og, Son of Fire. Og, Son of Fire, at one time was as important a creature in, fictional creature as Sherlock Holmes, Not quite. He didn't get any that big a literary acceptance, but he was certainly as important at one time almost as Tarzan. He was on the radio. And Og Son of Fire, yeah, I remember Og Son of Fire, they would come on. You know how Og Son of Fire came on the radio? In case you're interested in that, the bit of trivia from Americana, it would go like this. And then there would be a brief pause, and the announcer would say, Og Son of Fire! Og Son of Fire, primeval man, fights the forces of nature. As you remember, boys and girls, we left Og at his cave mouth being besieged by 17 ferocious saber-toothed tigers. Coming through the jungle directly at him was an enormous mastodon with great swinging tusks. And we could hear... We will rejoin Og Son of Fire in just a moment. But first, a word from Cocoa Malt. Well, it was a scary world, I'll tell you that. And so you see, and why do I remember who wrote Og Son of Fire? Why do I remember this? Why me? I must have been three when this was a big deal. But somehow it sticks in my mind. Listen, you can hear the sound of my head. I will tap it for you. Hear that? Shh. Listen carefully. Listen to that rotten gourd that I carry around on the top of my shoulders. I could have become Adlai Stevenson, Richard M. Nixon, Lenny Bruce, all the great men of our time, and who did I become? It's because of that lousy gourd that I carry around on top of my shoulders. The gourd that remembers who wrote Og Son of Fire. The gourd that remembers such things as bad radio shows heard at the age of three. The gourd that remembers such things as, why? Hooray for the U.S. of A. Hooray for the... How can I escape? By the way, that is the sound of a Greek chorus, in case you don't know. Go on. There's a Greek chorus wailing and keening my fate for having a rotten hollow gourd on the top of my shoulders. Oh, happy day, oh, sad benighted man. Okay, enough Greek drama for tonight. But I was deep, as I say, in my... my boy's life phase of existence, and there were other articles, of course, like, for example, there would be a question and answer period in the back of the book. It says, Dear Editor, I want to tell you that your instructions for tying the sheep shank knot must be incomplete because the knot does not slip the way it is supposed to slip. My mother has been tied to the clothes pole now for 7 days, ever since I got your magazine, and if you do not tell me quick on how to untie this, I will have to cut my secret and best and most prized knife, and, well, what's the matter with you? that's the kind of, or there would be the one saying, Dear Dan Beard, your recipe for Hunter's stew made my dad and me sick. And I don't know what kind of stuff you're selling, but I've been throwing up for 2 days. Signed, a disgusted ex-Moose Patrol Boy Scout who used to think that Dan Beard could cook a great hunter's stew. You're a rotten cook, Dan Beard. And then it would say, answer. Dan Beard answers that letter the following way. Son, you must have misread my recipe. We have used that recipe for hunter's stew on many of our expeditions into the far north and into the Antarctic regions. And it has always proven to be a true camp favorite when we are all sitting around the crackling fireside singing wonderful camping songs and songs of good fellowship and cheer. Next question. Well, that was the world you lived in, you know, in those days. And it was a world, of course, that was bounded on the left by this place that sold stamps on approval, you know, Ed? Boys, would you like to improve your stamp collection with a genuine collection of Fiji originals? 17 Fiji originals will be sent to you on approval if you'll just send your name and address and be put on our sucker list forever. And if you don't come across, we'll send our attorneys and the cops. Please send your name and address and send your dad's name, too, so we can also guarantee his wages. Signed, Happy Day Stamp Company, Aquamanock, Wisconsin, Box 7. Well, in would go my postcard. Then there would be another one. Boys, would you like to see through objects which are usually not transparent? Would you like to see through walls? Would you like to see through trunks? Would you like to see through all kinds of things that you shouldn't see through? The new magic X-ray eye machine for just 10 cents will enable you to do this. Send your name and address to Magic X-ray or Whoopi or Foyer Department, Box 17, Aquamanock, Wisconsin. Boys, boys, boys. Fun, fun, fun laughs. Yeah, sure. Then there was another great one that said, boys, would you like to throw your voice? Boys, would you like to be a ventriloquist? And then it would show a picture of a guy carrying a trunk. And he's bent over carrying the trunk, and you see a little wise son of a gun standing in the background, and he's got a funny look on his face, and the trunk is going, help, 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 help. Says, yes, boys, you can learn to throw your voice in just 17 seconds using the new magic voice-throwing little instrument that slips right under your tongue. No one will suspect. Amaze your classmates. Amuse your teacher. Mystify your parents. Be a laugh riot at your next party. In goes my postcard. Back comes that crummy, rotten piece of tin that did nothing. Put it in your mouth, and all it did was tickle your tongue. You go, nothing. So I try to throw my voice. I sit there at the kitchen table, and my mother is serving the potato salad. She is serving the weenies, and she is serving the red cabbage. And I go, help, help. She says, what's the matter? You got something stuck in your throat? I am figuring that I'm throwing my voice behind the icebox. Help, 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 help. And she belts me on the back. Here, spit it out. Boom. The thing flies out into the mashed potatoes. You don't want to hear more of this, do you? Yeah, the thing came out. You go, poop, out it came into the mashed potatoes. She says, now I told you, just spit. Is there anything else in there? Poop, up. And out came a spool that I had lost 2 weeks before. Spool, I was making a tank out of it. You know how to make tanks out of spools, don't you? Sure, a tank. You make a little tank out of the spool. You take a spool, you cut notches in it, and you put a rubber band through it, and you put soap on the rubber band, you know, and you take a little matchstick, twist it. Yeah, it goes unk, 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 unk. It's a tank. You never did that. Do you know, Ed, that for over 3 years, both of my thumbs were paralyzed because I had a loop of string that went around both thumbs, and on the loop of string was a great big overcoat button? And I go, wee, 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 wee. I went through 2 solid years doing that until all the circulation was cut off on my thumbs, and you don't want to hear that. I know some guys that are doing that for a living. I mean, mentally. I mean, it's mentally, of course. It's symbolically. They've been doing this for years. You don't want to hear about my gun experience, that, do you? How I came to be involved in the gun world? Well, all right. I was deep in the heart of my boy's life phase. See, and in those issues of boy's life, the last page always had a gigantic 4-color spread by the Daisy Air Rifle Company, showing either Roy Rogers, Gene Autry, or Ken Steele. Or once in a great while, there would be somebody named Buck Jones. And they're looking out at me, see, and they've got great big white hats on. And around his, you could see his talk, you know, his talk is like a balloon. you know, above his head. And it's a balloon that somehow is surrounded by a lariat, lasso, see? And he says, boys and girls, you'll discover real fun and have a lot of enjoyment in the afternoons and in the evenings and when you're out on those wonderful camping trips. If you order the special Buck Jones model Daisy Air Rifle number 201 with a magnetic compass built right into the stock, so that you will not get lost when you are out on your tramping trips out there near the Arctic Circle. It has a sight that is especially designed to work when you're working in close quarters with great wind currents. It has not only that, my own autograph, Buck Jones, carved right there into the stock. Yes, sirree, boys and girls, and on the other side of the stock is a magic sundial. You just insert that little sliver that comes with it, and you can tell time no matter where you are if you're lost out there in the frozen north. So, boys and girls, order now. Send for the catalog. Get your daddy to send off for the Buck Jones Model 201.
Oh, boy. Oh, I'd be out of my skull. And there's a picture of the Buck Jones Model 201, blue steel model. You know, big thing there. It's just 500 pellets. You know how a BB gun goes. You cock. Clunk. It goes. And then you, wee, wee, wee. You see the BB going off into the distance. Slight. You learn so that you can even shift to the left or the right as you shoot it to make up for all the, you know, how they go. They don't go straight. You know, sometimes right angles they fly out. But you get so that you're pretty good. And then there was of course, the nickel-plated Model 205. Which was the smaller model. It was for guys that were brought up in the sawed-off shotgun neighborhoods. You could carry it hidden in your coat pocket and that kind of stuff. Yeah, they really did. They had a short one. It would slip right up. And it had a walnut stock. And this thing carried 200 pellets. And it was noted for its extreme accuracy. And it was known as the Roy Rogers model. Roy apparently was a better shot than the Buck Jones, and he also was given to carrying his gun stuck up his sleeve a lot, you know, pretty sneaky type. And the Gene Autry model was pretty spectacular, actually. The Gene Autry model was carved. The Gene Autry model had etched in the blue steel all over. It had ranching scenes, you know, guys branding stuff, and it had guys galloping, and it had Indians roaring out of the hills. So it was all carved all over it, and the stock, but it was a terrible, terrible gun, because I had a friend who bought one of those. Did not work out well. What I was plunking for, even in those days, I had, somehow I had my eye on the wrong sparrow. Had I had my eye on the right sparrow, it would have been the Buck Jones model all the way, and I'd have become a Republican and would probably have had 3 Broadway shows to my credit now, and I'd had a big TV series under my belt. As it is, I plunked for the wrong model. The 205 nickel-plated stick-it-under-your-overcoat model. And it somehow looked real right to me. It was a really great little gun. And so I was really hung on this, and at the bottom of the thing, it says, all right, cayuses. All right, you mavericks, send this coupon in right now. Quick, do it right now. Quick, get out there and do it. You mavericks, get out there and get that free picture catalog, that wonderful picture catalog, the big catalog, in 4 colors about all the guns that are available. Now get out there, you mavericks. Go! Get out there. Hey, you! Well, 4 successive Saturdays, I am out there mailing my coupon in, because you know, kid expects instant mail. You know, you put it in the mailbox, and by the time you're home, you're already yelling because nothing's come. And many of us carry this problem all the way through life. See, I kept mailing these things in, figuring that there was discrimination going on, you know. And so, you know, there's a lot of discrimination. There's particularly the discrimination against kids with glasses. You know, so at that point, I'm wearing glasses. Well, I keep sending it in, and finally, that big catalog came, and boy, I was out of my skull. They had pistols. They had all kinds of Daisy Air rifles. They had the Al Capone model, which was a multiple shot model. It was a very interesting model, and it was designed to look like a violin case. It's one of the greatest, you know, oh yeah, you carry it into dancing class, you know, that says kids have a lot of fun in dancing class. Bring your violin case in, and then when you're behind the potted hide it, it says plays humoresque upon pressing what appears to be the cocking mechanism. Oh yeah, they had all kind. Oh, the kids learned life real early then. And so I am bucking for this gun. And my mother kept telling me, look, if you get one of those guns, you'll shoot your eyes out.
You'll mother said a big thing about eyes then. You'll shoot your eyes out. Now, don't bother me. You'll shoot your eye out. Went, ah, Ma. You know, Flick had one. He had the Buck Rogers model, the Buck Jones model. Oh, yeah, speaking of Buck Rogers, I will give you the brass figlicky with bronze oak leaf palm if you can tell me what weapon Buck Rogers was hawking to the kids in those days. No, it had a name for it. It had a name. It was not a ray gun. It had a name, a real name. It was not just called ray gun. It had a name. And you could get them everywhere, and the kids were popping each other with these things. They didn't really do it. They just made a sound. They go. Well, anyway, I'd get the boy's life, and I'd start yelling about 10 minutes after we'd arrive. You know, I'd go through the knot tying department and the trail blazing department. I'm back there with Buck Jones immediately. And this went on and on. And week after week until finally, the obbligato was constantly being played, this refrain. Look, do not bother me. Will you stop it? I am not going to have you shoot your eye out. No, Ma, I won't shoot my... Now look, will you stop bothering me? Well, this went on and on. It's the Chinese water torture treatment. The Chinese insane water torture treatment. And finally, Christmas Day came. There is a Christmas tree. I come roaring out, and there it is. There's all that stuff, packages and stuff. There's a sled, the whole jazz there. And I'm looking frantically. No, there it is. My BB gun. My beautiful BB gun. I've got a BB gun, and there's three packages of Coprotec BBs. The copper, you know, the copper-plated ones with the oil coating on them. Coprotec, it says, noted for excellence. Noted for extreme accuracy. Noted for accuracy and hard-hitting qualities. So I got out the instruction book, you know, and I'm cock-a-tunk. You know, they got no BBs, and I put the BBs in, and everybody's yelling and hollering. Hey, Ma, I'm going out for a while. And I get out, and I'm out in about 30 seconds. I'm telling you, so help me God, this is what happened. I go out, I walk around the back of the house to the back steps, and we got the steps in the back there, you know. And with the gun came about 19 little targets. I put up a target real frantically. I put it up, see? I put it up there against the steps. I back it up against the steps. I go back about 15 feet. I aim. Chunk. And with that, pow! My glasses fly off, crash all over the street. The thing bounced back and belted me right in the right eye. Took my glasses all the way over to Bruner's house. There was glass all over the driveway. If there was anything I got scalped and screamed at for, it was busting my glasses. My glasses are all over the street.
Gee, couldn't even get the recording to go to the end. Well, with seconds to spare, that was Gene Shepherd, November 7th, 1963, an early version of the Red Rider. Or is it Buck Jones? I wonder when he finally decided it was Red Rider. Maybe it just sounded better. Who knows? Gene Shepherd, not available anywhere else but right here. In the dustbin of history. I'm your curator and janitor, Max Schmid. More next week, Witch's Tale, All Fantasy, Another Lost Gene Shepherd. I'm going to try to wrap this show up, not exactly on time, but close enough. Thanks for listening. Good night. Go look at the moon.
Hi, George. Well, finished with the show. What do you want me to do now?
Did you have a good time in there?
Yeah. Oh, boy, it was fun.
Great. How'd you like to do it every day?
Yeah. That would be neat. Hey, wait a minute. Do I still get to be the janitor?
Sure.
Oh, okay. It's a deal.